Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week at the Damage Report. It's Monday. I'm John Iderola. Brooke Thomas is in studio because, of course, it is a Monday.
I know. So it's good to have you here. I can't talk, but my voice is weird. I'm giving you a little Lindsay Lohan today, the first version of Lindsay's voice.
I have not tracked the evolution of her voice,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit, but this is like the first version, what you most likely know. She's got an accent now.
Okay.
But just kind of that raspy, I don't know, I lost my voice. It's just doing a weird thing.
That's weird. Well, I also have a sinus infection that I've had for my entire life, and I'm hoping, like, I can feel it in my throat. I'm hoping it gives me that, like, Phoebe Buffay, like, raspiness, but we'll see. I don't know if it's going to happen. On the show today, we're going to talk about our voices. We're also going to have some news, though. We've got a big report coming out of the IPCC on climate change. We're going to be breaking that down. We're going to be responding to, did you know that there's a new Supreme Court justice? That's a depressing thing to say. We'll be talking about that. A little bit later on the show, though, we're also going to be joined by a Utah State Senate candidate, Marsha Holland, who's going to talk about some of the stakes in her race. Very interesting race, by the way. There's no Democrat in this race, but that doesn't mean that your values aren't necessarily being represented, as we'll explain then. And then we're going to close out the show. Today is Columbus Day, a day where we celebrate Christopher Columbus, who just like discovered stuff and didn't do anything bad. So we'll be breaking down some facts about his life in case you don't know.
We're going to look up discovered in the dictionary and see if there's an extra definition of like someone already did it, but you came set. You know what I mean? Like we're going to do all kinds of things.
Just as a little preview for that, it reminds me of on John Oliver last night. He was talking about it was US and British news reports of Brazil from like the 20s and 30s. And one of the reports from the US was literally, it was in Brazil. It's a land of, it's so big, there's land never seen by white man. That's a really weird way to put it.
It's very honest, though.
But honest.
Yeah.
Honest. Okay, with that, why don't we talk about the end of the world? The climate's heating up. That's a fact that the Chinese want you to believe, but also non-Chinese, like scientists. So don't believe Donald Trump. The evidence is actually there. And there's a new report. This is it was issued by the IPCC, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, saying that the planet is going to reach a threshold of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels by as early as 2030. So this is not one of those things that's going to happen like to your grandkids. We're going to be experiencing
this. It's going to happen to you.
Yeah, right. During the fourth term of Donald Trump, it's going to hit 1.5 degrees, which by itself, before we go any farther and talk about the worst case scenarios, this is the scenario. It's going to cause extreme drought, wildfires, floods, food shortages for hundreds of millions of people. So, yay, that's what we're going to have. And that's the best case scenario at this point. Because remember, the 1.5 degrees that they're talking about there, our big ambitious goal as a planet that the Paris Climate Accords are attempting to stop us from exceeding is 2 degrees. So that's even worse than that.
Right.
Let's talk about what 2 degrees would actually do to us. 2 degrees Celsius would cause freshwater availability to drop by twice as much in the Mediterranean as it would under a 1.5 degrees Celsius. So again, that's not versus what we have now. That's just the extra bad over what we're definitely going to have if we can keep it to 2 degrees. Some of the most densely populated regions in the world, like Southeast Asia, face far greater crop declines with an additional 0.5 degree Celsius of warming. And warming. And by 2100, limiting the global average temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius would avert 150 million extra premature deaths over 2 degrees Celsius. It's pretty bad.
It's terrible.
And that is why this is making front page news on places like the Washington Post. Yes, it's small print and it's halfway down the page and you kind of have to look to find it and it's next to a story about a potato. But it is there, I guess, at least. And let's talk some more about the consequences. Again, this is 1.5 degrees versus 2 degrees. What we're going to have in 10 years or so versus what we're trying to keep it to. Global sea levels would rise 10 centimeters lower by 2100 if we cannot get it to 2 degrees. The likelihood of an Arctic ocean free of sea ice in summer would be once per century instead of at least once per decade. Coral reefs would decline by 70 to 90% instead of being completely wiped out. So that's still pretty bad either way. And the percentage of the population exposed to severe heat waves at least once every 5 years would increase to 37% from 14%. And again, that's just one extra half degree Celsius.
Right.
And that's the sort of heat waves, of course, that kills many people. Right. We experienced that in Europe earlier this year.
And not only that, the lack of food for some populations, it's going to happen because of this. And you know, it's fascinating, I think, to a lot of people that the rest of the world is afraid of this and needing to act on this. But the Trump administration seems to think, Tuesday, it's Monday.
It's either hoax.
Right.
Or if it can help us to justify removing Obama-era fuel efficiency standards, getting rid of those regulations, then they admit that the heating is going to happen. They just say it's so bad and it's going to be so bad that there's no point in even trying to stop it.
Which is scary.
Which is really pathetic.
Right.
I mean, like I tweeted that our species is committing suicide. And, you know, that's obviously like it seems hyperbolic. But and especially because suicide is supposed to be like consensual. But like, how seriously are we taking it really? Like, there's the scientists and there's some activists and, you know, people care. If you ask them, they'll say that they care generally.
Yeah, but generally, are we prioritizing people don't want bad things to happen to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you've got like, you know, 99% of people who don't want bad things to happen to the earth. But the percentage, you know, it drops drastically when it comes to people who, you know, really just like deeply care and understand and want to do something about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you actually prioritize it enough to do something? And if you want to do something, what are you willing to do?
Right.
What are you willing to change about the way you live your life? What are you willing to vote for? What, like they, it's diffused by, it might hurt the economy. Like that's what the other side will say. Like we should be willing to drastically change our civilization. In a bad way, like in 70 years, like, you know, we can't produce grain and things like that. That's okay. Rather than, hey, maybe we like let the economy take a little bit of a hit in the short term. One in which many people aren't even sure is actually true, considering that, of course, we would be investing in a number of different industries that could become much larger than the polluting ones that they'll replace. And many people are willing to just sit on the sidelines and say like, hey, yeah, we'll check in every couple of years. And they'll constantly say like, here's how bad it's going to be. And then we'll raise it to, and next time in 3 years, I'll be doing, well, here's what it'll look like at 2.5 degrees. And most people are okay with that. By the way, again, that's the 2 degrees that we're trying to limit it to. If we don't participate and if we don't do what's necessary, it's not going to be 2 degrees. It's going to be 3. It's going to be 3.5. It's going to be 4. It's going to be far worse than what we were just describing. And we have to decide as individuals and as a species, are we actually going to face this challenge? And there are so many people that are willing to just, you know, let's see what Donald Trump does. You know, maybe he'll take it seriously.
Or
how bad could it possibly be?
You're the leader of the country is your voice, unfortunately. And, you know, you can't, you almost, part of you can't blame, you know, some people. You don't understand it. The president says this doesn't matter. This isn't a big deal. This is what matters. This was an overreach. And so, I mean, what can you expect?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I'm not, you know, I'm not the expert here. I'm not the scientist here. So I'm going to turn
you're the expert here.
Yeah, but in an irrelevant way compared to them.
Just so we're clear.
So I want to read just one or two quotes from the working group that produced this new report. This is Deborah Roberts of the IPCC's working group co-chair. It's a line in the sand, and what it says to our species is that this is the moment we must act now. This is the largest clarion bell from the science community, and I hope it mobilizes people and dents the mood of complacency. Another of the co-chairs says, one of the key messages that comes out very strongly from this report is that we are already seeing the consequences of 1 degree Celsius of global warming through more extreme weather, rising sea levels, and diminishing Arctic sea ice, among other things. But I don't want, like, I hate coming on the show and being sort of, I guess, fatalistic or depressed. I will admit to you openly, I am in a state of pretty extreme political depression right now, mostly because of the Kavanaugh thing. But like we're trying to mobilize the population, both the people who generally agree with us on the issues and those who don't, to take seriously the threats that are facing us. And so many Americans can be diverted by, they're being unfair to Kavanaugh. Look at the libs are going too far. The SJWs are too extreme. I don't like it. And they just allow this insanity to go on politically.
Right.
Because they want to strike back against SJWs. It may seem weird that I'm bringing that up, but that is actually what is distracting so many people. Like, what percentage of the Republican voters their only goal in life right now is to see the libs cry.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
And along the way, they're okay with things like the world heating up in a way that makes a lot of the way that our society functions not possible.
Not possible.
Yeah. So look, that's the depressing part of the news. Okay, we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
We come back. Good news on the Supreme Court.
Oh.
Psych. After this. Welcome back, everyone. So it happened. Kavanaugh over the weekend was put onto the Supreme Court. The vote was 50-48. So a close one, far closer than the votes of any other person serving on the Supreme Court. And it looked like along the way over the past couple of weeks, maybe it wouldn't happen a little bit. But, you know, deep down inside, it always sort of felt like it would. I mean, they had a novel strategy. They had a Republican president, a Republican Senate. And so they got the guy that they wanted, which is generally the way things work. What did you think about him being confirmed?
It was fast. It's a really quick situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have hope along the way that it wouldn't happen? What do you think it means that he is in the end actually getting on there?
I don't know if hope either way was where I was kind of looking at this, but logic and just numbers said that this was always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really did think once like the fourth woman came out. Like, I know that we live in a society where one woman saying something happened, obviously that doesn't count for anything, and we understand it, accept that. But like two, and then three, and then four, like you're getting up to, oh, this kind of seems like a Trump or a Cosby thing. But I guess even there, we only had a 50% success rate on finally getting justice after literally decades of accusations.
I did not think Republican senators were ever, for any reason, not going to back him. We have a lot of senators that are just like radically partisan.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it is these days. How it's kind of always been, I guess you could say. So I didn't expect that. I did not think the president was going to pull him.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think, I'm going to be totally honest, I did at one point think, there's no way he's going to put his family through this. He's going to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. So I did think that, and I thought that was completely logical, but that didn't happen. And so when that didn't happen, and none of those other,
Yeah, I thought his testimony, when I saw hers, I thought, okay, this is so credible. I mean, really, how are they going to continue to say that she's a liar? They found a way. They did find a way. And when he came out raging and crying, like that didn't matter either. And in the end, it came down to Susan Collins, who disappointed us, and Jeff Flake, who disappointed us, you know, as expected. And yeah, when Collins came out, we're going to play a little bit of Collins sort of trying to protect her reputation, I guess, after doing what she did. A lot of people said, why are you focusing so much on Collins? To just say, you know, that she's bad to do this, you know, that's just letting so many other Republicans slide. And my reaction is, yeah, because we know that they are 100% partisan, irrational people who would never take the word of a woman over the political gain of getting a Supreme Court justice that they want. They were never, like no one ever said, Ted Cruz, he'll think about it and decide. We know that they don't think about it. So to say that we should look critically at every one of those Republican senators seems like the most naive thing that I've ever heard of. Yeah, they were never going to vote against him.
I saw that too, and people were saying, you know, why are you putting on a woman? There are all of these Republican senators. I think there are 5 women, right, that are Republican senators. I may have the number wrong, and I should know that.
I'm not sure, actually.
But there are other women, and there are other men. There are all of these men, and why are you putting it on the woman? But I think that misses a big aspect of this conversation. It appears, you know, Collins likes this kind of narrative that she has the possibility of bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. Blake loves it, absolutely, because we've seen time and time again his tweets, what he says, they don't match what he actually does. Mm-hmm. But he's very, like, you know, he's 2 different people almost when it comes to his votes, what he supports, and what he says in interviews, what he tweets. And she's kind of the same. And so it's almost unfair to say, why are you focusing on her? Well, she gave a speech.
She wants you to
focus on her. She likes the narrative that she can be swayed. And so that's why it didn't start with people saying, I'm going to pick out a woman and blame everything on her. No, it kind of started with that woman, that senator, saying, hey, listen to me. And because this is kind of how it happens on everything. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time that it's been seen as Collins is the swing vote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and by the way, we've attacked Flake, we've attacked Manchin. Those are both guys that wanted you to think that maybe they'd be reasonable. Right. And they weren't, so we attacked them. And so I think she deserves, so hopefully one tiny silver lining that totally wasn't worth going through this experience that will come out of this is that the reputation Collins has as someone who's going to be reasonable and actually think about the effects of something rather than just following what her party wants should be dead. Not just because of the way she voted, but the speech that she gave. Because in the end, after all of this time spent trying to come up with a cover or an explanation, she couldn't come up with anything. She spread so much disinformation, said so much insulting, condescending stuff about Christine Blasey Ford. In the end, that speech was designed as a preemptive defense against many people who would say you're doing the wrong thing. But I think that it was almost as bad as the vote, because it advanced all of the false narratives that the Republicans and Donald Trump had been putting forward about Brett Kavanaugh against Christine Blasey Ford. In the end, she agreed with all of them. I mean, she came out and said today, you know, I do believe her. I believe she was attacked. I just think that she's wrong about who it was. I think that she had a hand put over her mouth, that she looked just inches away into the face of a man and misidentified him on the most traumatic and memorable moment of her life. But I trust women, and I want the credit for being a feminist who's going to defend women. That is absurd.
And that's kind of Trump's, that's from his playbook. It takes me back to fake news. And so what it was, okay, the Times reported something that was 100% true. He didn't like it. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to have to answer to it. So he said, it's fake. Mm-hmm. And that creates a whole new narrative. And so here we are, where Susan Collins, if you just look at the facts, Senator Collins is calling Dr. Ford a liar, but doesn't want to say that because that makes her look bad. And so she's saying, I don't believe her whole story. I think she's mistaken. Which kind of like the people who vote you in or not, you know, because that's part of the conversation now, aren't getting, you know, 100% honesty. That doesn't make any sense. You can simplify. I believe something happened to her. I do not believe it was Brett Kavanaugh. You can simplify that into, I think she lied. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, no one's doing that.
Yeah. Well, and some have even gone farther. Trump has now moved to today. It might have been at a rally last night. He said this was all fabricated accusations, a hoax perpetrated by the Democrats. So that's way past she's mistaken.
Right.
It's that it was fabricated. They created it out of nothing.
He's flipped on that too, that he went from, you know, obviously mocking her and making fun of her having people say for him that that's not what he was doing, to now kind of, you know, digging
just
deep
attacking
in that. And what is fascinating to me is that that actually worked. I think I saw a huge difference in like just massive support after he did what a lot of people thought was horrifying. Mm-hmm. It seemed to kind of rally everyone together and make everyone, you know, stand strong. And you know what? Mm-hmm. If he can do this, I can vote. Mm-hmm. That's nothing. That's not, you know what I mean?
I mean,
it works. He has a strategy.
The thing about a cult of personality is that it needs two people. It needs the head of the cult of personality, and it needs the devil that they will take down.
Yeah.
And so he provides that for them. Let's move to a video of Susan Collins. Susan Collins, shocked to find out that there's money in politics. And by God, she doesn't like it, as you'll see in this clip.
This is a classic quid pro quo as defined in our bribery laws. They are asking me to perform an official act. And if I do not do what they want, $2 million+ is going to go to my opponent. I think that if our politics has come to the point where people are trying to buy votes and buy positions, that we are in a very sad place.
That's the place you're in.
You've been in that place
for a while.
Answer?
I don't know. I mean, but it's relatively recent. But yeah, that's, yeah, you get money. If you vote a certain way, you get money spent against you. If you don't vote that way, yeah, that's the system that you seem to enjoy when it's not, you know, working against you, when it's not, you know, money that could go to a competitor of yours. Yeah, that's the terrible system of financing campaigns that we have right now that we would like to get rid of, but that you generally support. Maybe she's changed. Maybe she's flipped as a result of this experience.
It's also not bribery. That's kind of what all of this is.
I've heard it's speech.
Unfortunately, the majority
of, what they say.
You know, her colleagues, their supporters, they are voting for their supporters. The problem is that she's one of the few that doesn't always speak for her supporters. And now they are getting tired of. There are other senators who are safe. You know what I mean? They've been there forever. They are going to be there forever. The people who vote for them are going to fight for them forever. She happens to be in a state where things could change.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is then, bribery.
Perhaps it will next time around. We'll see if she ends up with a challenger because of what she's done.
2 years ago? 2 years?
I think it's in 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Okay, little break, come back. Much more news for you. Welcome back, everyone. Let's turn to different news. I was going to say lighter. It's not really lighter. It's light in that it's laughable, but laughable in a way that could lead to the end of the world. So let's talk about this. Interesting report about an experience Lindsey Graham had back earlier in the Trump administration with Donald Trump that had to do with Fox News. So you have basically all of what's driving our politics in one room at the same time.
Okay.
So while discussing national security with the president at the White House, Lindsey Graham said he was concerned about how to handle America's relationship with North Korea. Just then, footage of a missile launch came on the TV nearby, which was Fox News, of course. Despite the fact that Trump would be one of the very first people to know about a hypothetical nuclear attack, he thought that Fox News was reporting an incoming missile. In reality, it was an old clip the channel was using for a regular news segment. Thankfully, Lindsey Graham was in the room with him and shouted, "That's old footage, old footage." Senator said he changed his mind about the president and became his ally for just this reason, to make sure Trump doesn't wrongly believe he needs to rush to his nuclear button.
Well, that's convenient.
And look, maybe that experience didn't happen exactly as it's being reported, but it's not like Comey's saying it. That's Lindsey Graham, who now loves the president, saying that the president was worried we were about to be nuked because he saw stock footage on Fox News.
He thought people were on the news just kind of calmly reporting a missile coming to ruin the whole country, take us all out. People were sitting on the news just calmly reporting that.
Yeah. Look, there's been a number of times when Donald Trump has communicated with the attorney general via Twitter or something. And I will always say, don't you know that you can call him anytime you want? You can talk to the FBI. You can talk to all these different groups. You're the president. You have access to that. And very often the counterpoint will be, that's just his communication strategy. He's doing it publicly to put pressure on him, which maybe with the attorney general is actually the case. But this sort of thing behind closed doors makes me believe that he frequently just forgets who he is and what position he holds. He knows he has power, obviously. But he honestly thought that the way he would find out about a nuke launch was from Fox News, that there wouldn't be somebody calling from the Pentagon.
Right.
The Secretary of Defense wouldn't be in his ear. They wouldn't be rushing in with a nuclear football or whatever. He would find about it on the news.
Everyone would find out about it on Fox News and Fox News only. But what is the weirdest part of this story to me is that, speaking of not knowing your own power, a senator is sitting there and says he sees someone, the president, assume all of this. It makes no real sense to anybody reading that and decides the best plan of action is to support this man.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Look, it's kind of like a version of what we've heard from some other sources inside of the White House. The like, we're the only thing that will stop the Holocaust from happening, you know, with North Korea. They seem to really believe that they have to help. And it's even the same issue here, that they're the last defense. I would say getting him out of there is the last defense. That's like saying like, okay, the drunk guy is going to drive the car, but I want to be sitting in the passenger side to help like correct the wheel if he starts to go too crazy. No, take his keys. Take his keys, and you have the constitutional authority to do so. Maybe not Lindsey Graham, but somebody could.
Everyone has this weird angle that they have to listen, this like narrative that they have to craft. You could just say, and I think a lot of your supporters would be, you know, perfectly fine with Cruz and Lindsey Graham's kind of saying, yes, the reason why I'm supporting someone who was so nasty to me is because it's the president and I want to be supportive to the leader of the country. They could kind of just say that. It's really simple. But instead, they all have these weird stories and massive, confusing reasons why.
Yeah.
It all, like, it seems like it stems in like embarrassment. Like, I don't know. This just seems bizarre that this.
It does seem bizarre.
You could just say, because he's the president. And I just feel like that's the best for the country to support him.
Yeah.
If you know, if that's how you feel. But this, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because I think he's confused and I think that he doesn't know what he's doing. So I'm going to support him because that's kind of what he's saying.
Fear, I guess.
Right.
Except you don't want to seem scared. Okay, I want to call a little bit of an audible because if we don't talk about something later, I'm going to lose my mind.
We're going to talk about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, we are, actually. So, sorry, I didn't give the heads up to the control room at all. So maybe we can just get rid of the lower third or whatever. I just need to mix it up a little bit.
No, it's okay.
The news, look, I'm going to keep it real with you. The last couple weeks with the Kavanaugh stuff has been really rough. Like, like we've said it many times, but he's going to be on the Supreme Court for decades.
Yeah.
Decades. It's the young, like him and Gorsuch are way younger than the rest of the people on the court. They're going to be there when we're retiring. If you're like, for you to, when they leave, still be a young person, it would be bizarre that you're watching this show right now. You'd have to be so young. So it's depressing. So let's turn now to Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift doesn't generally get involved in politics. You know, that's not her thing.
It's something that she's been criticized about over and over and over
for not using
again.
Her platform. But look, she now is, she's not talking about the president or anything, but for Tennessee, she's coming out against Marsha Blackburn, telling people that they need to get involved in the Senate race and they need to vote the right way. She posted this thing on Instagram, very long. She gave multiple specific reasons why she's not supporting Marsha Blackburn, including votes that she's against. And as a result, she is being tarred and feathered, saying, you know, how dare you get involved? Right-wing pundits are talking down to her, saying, like, basically, you're too stupid to know what. Like, it doesn't matter that she listed the specific reason she opposes her. You're too stupid to get involved in this. And what is, of course, amazing, and everybody I get it has acknowledged this, is how quickly they've turned around from Kanye West. Of course he should speak up on politics. He's a musician. Everyone should listen to him. MAGA.
And everyone should, musicians alike, should, I think, be involved in this process. I strongly feel like everyone should vote. Everyone should have an opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be like, you know, shut up and just do this. But Kanye hasn't been making sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not ever going to say, you know, Kanye, you shouldn't do this. You should. He's not making any sense. Not, and that's not stopping at him. It's saying he supports Trump. That's fine. But all of his reasons, he doesn't make any sense. He's saying things that aren't correct, aren't true, and he still has so much support behind him from Trump supporters, and now she's saying things that actually do make sense, and maybe someone wrote it for her. Who knows? I'm not saying that I think she's a political genius. I'm just saying what came out on her platform made sense, and now people are saying don't listen to celebrities. I don't. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, look,
this is a big celebrity.
Yeah, she's very popular. I mean, it's not Beyonce or anything, but it's getting up towards there.
I think I read she's the highest grossing U.S. tour.
Really?
Yeah.
More than Beyonce.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Well, we'll see about that. Who's the country musician that the right loves The guy who crapped his pants?
I thought it was her.
Ted Nugent. Okay, so here's the thing. They want this to seem like this. No, she didn't have an accident. That was Ted Nugent. So, yeah, but they did love her. So the right is obviously pissed off about that because they've hoped, you know, like they've hoped against hope that she will be their white supremacist icon. She's so perfect and, you know, milky white skin and all that. Sorry, she doesn't like the Republicans.
But they Brooke want would this. Never say for 100 Alex.
No, but that's what they say. Like, they worship her as this, like, Norse deity, basically. So what they want this to be is, well, you're being hypocritical, or they're being hypocritical. Like, they liked Kanye, now they don't like Taylor Swift. We like Taylor Swift, we don't like Kanye. No, there doesn't have to be any hypocrisy whatsoever. Look at what they're actually saying and see if they make any sense. Kanye West is a raving lunatic. Justifiably so, he apparently has some problems that need to be dealt with. Taylor Swift explains very carefully in a logical way what she supports. Ted Nugent is a crazy person who literally, like, defecated in his pants to get out of going to the Vietnam War and talks about flying over South Central and gunning people down from a helicopter. Like, this is not about some celebrities should talk, some shouldn't. It's about, is what they're saying actually, does it make any sense whatsoever? LeBron's been talking about politics and doing fabulous things in terms of charity. He's not just ranting and raving like some sort of lunatic.
LeBron is my male Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a LeBron fan.
For many reasons. So just apply the same exact standard to all celebrities. Everybody gets to express their political opinions. Not everybody does so in a way that makes any sense or deserves much respect at all, any more than any random person does. So if you're a celebrity, speak up. Lots of them do. We've had actresses on recently that get involved and know what they're talking about. That is all that we expect. That is the standard. You don't have to worry about being hypocritical or whatever if you apply the same standard based on logic and reason.
Absolutely. She's saying, you have one person saying, it's not about what political side you're on or what you want to vote for. You have one person saying, hey, this woman, I do not support her because two things she has voted for, I think that being voted against, I think that her not supporting those are harmful to what I care about. And then you have another person saying the Democrats wanted to take black fathers out of the home and promote welfare, and also slavery was a choice. And I think it is okay to look at that and say, at the very least, he misspoke.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, best case scenario, he misspoke when he said, let's abolish the 13th Amendment.
Yeah. Again, best case scenario.
Best case scenario.
Okay, so we do unfortunately have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by another candidate. This is Marsha Holland, Utah's State House District 73. Very interesting race for a couple of reasons, both in terms of who's running, who's not running, and also a few very noteworthy national monuments in her district that we've been talking about on the show this year. We'll be breaking that down after this. Welcome back. We turn now to Utah. We're going to be joined by a candidate for State House District 73, Marsha Holland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We're very happy to have you here as well. So I want to talk obviously about your candidacy, you know, the issues you're running on. But first of all, you know, I like to learn a little bit more about different parts of this country. Sure. So your district, 73, what is it actually like?
District 73 is full of public lands, some of the most beautiful landscapes in the country, including Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, dozens of state parks, federal lands, state lands. Some of the most public lands in the nation are in District 73.
Yeah, I was amazed at how much you were able to fit into one district there. And obviously, not that long ago, both Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears made national news when it was announced that there was going to be some change to the regulations in terms of how they can be used. Is that, inside of your district, is that a big issue in your race?
Absolutely. Although federal issues, those are both federal issues that'll be decided in the courts, they have divided our communities in the Grand Staircase has been around for 20 years, Bears Ears much less time. But in the end, what's happened with these issues is that they have, one, to some extent divided our community, our communities and counties, but two, they've really overshadowed what's going on in our communities and the issues that involve people, healthcare, education, roads. These are the things that have been ignored over the last many years as the issues with the national monuments have come into the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the race that we've got coming up. So Phil Lyman is the Republican who's going to be running against you. You are an unaffiliated candidate. There's actually no Democrat in the race. How does that help to shape the campaign that you're running against Phil Lyman?
It shapes the campaign a lot. The Republicans rule Utah. The Democrats, you would never run as a Democrat in Utah. However, what's happening in Utah, as it is across the nation, is that people are becoming unaffiliated, sort of tired of the partisanship and the corporate takeover of both parties. Mm-hmm. And so this is a really important issue in itself. People would like to have government speak for them, and that hasn't been happening. There have been corporations, high-powered, money people who have taken over our government. And here in rural Utah, we feel that most decidedly the issues that are most important to us, for our children, our families, our elders, are being completely ignored in favor of dirt roads and public land issues that are actually federal issues. Mm-hmm.
So what sort of issues are people bringing up as you're going around campaigning?
Yeah, so that's a really been a pretty major part of my campaign, is to go out and meet people and knock on doors. That hasn't happened in this district for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And that's largely because someone wears the R label and they're an automatic shoe-in. And so people who are running for office haven't actually gotten out and talked to people over the years. And some of the issues we're hearing about have to do with roads, infrastructure in particular, access to healthcare, education, and making sure that the children who are in our schools are learning things that will help them in the future, creating pathways between education and economic development and jobs in our communities. These are the most important issues. But the really top issue that I hear throughout our counties is clean water. Mm-hmm. We don't have clean water in some of our counties. There's water, but it's tainted by uranium and arsenic. And in some cases, there is no running water at all in these communities. We have tenuous water systems, solid waste disposals. Meanwhile, we have millions of people visiting wow. us a year.
These water issues, is this mainly natural, or is this as a result of contamination from exploitation or mining or something like that?
Exactly. It's a result of exploitation, extraction, mining. In one place I visit, Ute Mountain, Ute White Mesa, they do have running water. And if used to, they don't drink it because it smells like sulfur.
Oh, wow.
And the children, even if their clothes are washed in this water, they end up smelling like sulfur. So they travel the few miles up the road into Blanding to wash their clothes in a washing machine up north, just literally a few miles away.
Wow.
And the closest place to the county seat has a village less than a block away from the main town that has no water, sewer, or electric. And it's been 60 years that way. These are really deplorable conditions for people to live in without just basic running water. We don't realize that this is going on in our country, going on in our state. People are surprised to hear about it in Utah. And we intend to highlight those issues and begin to make movements to make sure basic necessities are covered in our rural counties.
Wow. Well, Marsha Holland, you're running in the District 73, Utah State House of Representative race. Certainly sounds like, based on what you're saying, that people might be looking to make a change from what you said, automatically voting for the Republican. So thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, it is Columbus Day. We're going to provide a little bit of information about the holiday for you. Hey, everybody, a little bit more time for you. So let's learn a little bit about the past.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Today is Columbus Day. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it's still a thing, even though every year, thankfully, more and more people every year go through the actual historical truths behind the myths that we were taught in school about Christopher Columbus, that he discovered America when... Uh-huh. you were mentioning early in the show, other people that actually already discovered it?
Believe it or not, there were people.
They sailed over from Europe?
Lived here.
Oh, but that doesn't count. That doesn't count.
They don't count.
What a weird thing to teach kids. But we do.
Right?
And he discovered it. And he was just wildly wrong. First of all, he didn't figure out that the world was round or whatever. They'd known about that for a long time. Whole civilizations had known about it. We just lie to kids. But in terms of what he actually did, not the myths, the truth, should we have Columbus Day? Is this one of the few historical figures that we have a whole day dedicated to? Well, look, we're going to go over some of what he did here. Understand, this is not all of it. Like, honestly, I've done this segment so many times now over the years that I just pluck representative horrendous things. So,
okay.
By the way, so one person I'm hoping will watch this video and learn a little bit about Christopher Columbus is Donald Trump, because he tweeted this. Christopher Columbus's spirit of determination and adventure has provided inspiration to generations of Americans. On Columbus Day, we honor his remarkable accomplishments as a navigator and celebrate his voyage into the unknown expanse of the Atlantic Ocean. Well, look, he was determined, and he did have an adventure, but it's not a good one necessarily. Here are some of the things that he did. He sent a letter back to Europe saying, when he'd gotten here, about the native population. There are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 are now in demand, and for all ages, a good price must be paid. So yes, they were taking native girls as young as 9 to 10 and selling them to be the slaves of people that they brought over to the New World. This was pretty big. We got an account from one of the people who worked with him of a particular sex slave that was given to this man by Christopher Columbus, where he says, while I was in the boat, I captured a very beautiful woman whom the Lord Admirable, that's Columbus, gave to me. When I had taken her to my cabin, she was naked, as was their custom. I was filled with a desire to take my pleasure with her and attempted to satisfy my desire. She was unwilling and so treated me with her nails that I wished I had never begun. I then took a piece of rope and whipped her soundly, and she let forth such incredible screams that you would not have believed your ears. Eventually, we came to such terms, I assure you, that you would have thought she'd been brought up in a school for whores. So that is the experience he had with a sex slave that Christopher Columbus personally gave to him to beat and then begin raping as long as he could.
Here's the thing, a lot of the men at the beginning of this country, at the beginning of, and this is not about politics, at the beginning of what is now our country, a lot of the men that you are taught in school to celebrate and to appreciate and to be so thankful to for what we have today, a lot of these men were monsters. And
that's true.
That's just that. And a lot of them, you know, a couple of them are on a giant mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in South that's Dakota.
True. You want to hear some more monstrous behavior?
Sure.
So you had the sex slavery. What about just traditional slavery, which also traditionally involved a lot of sex slavery? Columbus ordered 1,500 men and women seized, letting 400 go and condemning 500 to be sent back to Spain and another 600 to be enslaved by Spanish men remaining on the island. About 200 of the 500 sent back to Spain died on the voyage and were thrown by the Spanish into the Atlantic. If you believe based on this that they have a casual relationship with the life of these slaves, that is true. Multiple sources confirmed accounts of exhausted Indian carriers chained by the neck, whose heads the Spaniards severed from their bodies so that they might not have to stop to untie them. So rather than remove the dead slaves from this chain line, they just cut off their heads to separate the head from the body. But let's jump to the worst part. Beyond the individual acts of just horrendous, barbarous behavior, there was the overall effect that Columbus coming to the New World had on the native population that he greeted. There were about 300,000 inhabitants of Hispaniola in 1492. Between then and 1496, that's just a couple of years, 100,000 died, half due to mass suicide, which came in many different forms. Right. Just a few years later, the population was down to 60,000. And about a half century after he got there, it was down to 500 people. So from 300,000 to 500, that has got to be one of the most effective, just efficient acts of genocide in the history of our species. This is the guy that we're celebrating today. We still do this. This wasn't found out like yesterday or last year. We've known this for a long time. But we still just celebrate him so much so that the president just tweets fact-free, ahistorical BS support for this guy.
You know, this is not the president that you can ask for any better regarding this. I think, you know, he's not going to be the one that's going to be like the first person to say, you know what? maybe Christopher Columbus isn't someone we should be celebrating. This is not going to come from this president. We know that. But I wonder, at what point are we going to start being more responsible when it comes to what we teach children? Mm-hmm. What's in their books? I wonder about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, honestly, every single thing in a book growing up that has to do with any sort of Native population is going to be, first of all, it was written and researched with no reference whatsoever to people from that actual culture. None whatsoever. It is purely from the eyes of colonizers. And even then, it's not accurate generally. And I agree, he's never going to learn, but hopefully we will. And, right. and to go on Twitter and see people defending Christopher Columbus, like people who consider themselves reasonable after seeing these historical facts, that is depressing. We should be better. We should certainly teach our children better.
Yeah.
I agree. Thank you so much.
Oh,
as
thank
always,
you.
For being on the show.
I
it's always good to
here.
Have you here. Mondays are the best days. Thank you for watching.
If you haven't already. Brett and JR.
Sorry, Brett. Brett's on the fifth best one of each week. Anyway, thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.